Hello and welcome to the show. This is the Future of Learning podcast and I'm your host, Lloyd. In today's episode, we're going to look at digital credentials. You may have heard of that term before, or digital badges, or cities of learning. We will explore through Gráinne Hamilton what each of those terms really mean, why you might want to consider them, and the benefits they'll have to organisations, but also to individuals themselves. There's lots of research out there right now that says future skills are going to be very generalistic. So leadership, communication, creativity, and the list can go on. And what I think that really means is that with the increased focus of automation through artificial intelligence, people in their roles will have to move from one area to another and demonstrate those transferable skills. The challenge for organizations is this: how do you know where those individuals are and how do you get them to work for you and then move them on after into other roles that will be existing? The challenge for the learner is this: how do you make those opportunities aware? So if you've got a given competence in creativity, you may just think that suits one particular type of job. But actually, through digital credentials, there's an opportunity to create a highly visible golden thread of opportunities and really to turn competencies into a currency, if you like. So Gráinne Hamilton is an education consultant and director of We Are Open Co-op. Thank you, Gráinne, for your time, and thank you guys for listening. I'd love to hear your thoughts after. Let's go into the show. So we got in contact after you posted a blog article really about the cities of learning and what you're trying to do in Glasgow in particular. At that time, it was the first time for me I'd ever come across the concepts of cities of learning, and I was fascinated with your article. Can we just start the conversation then by very broadly, what is a city of learning? What's the background and context, again, for anyone who's heard that term for the first time?
Yep, so a city of learning is a place-based technology-enabled approach to connecting individuals to learning, employment and civic opportunities across a defined area, such as a city. So it's an approach that includes the networks that a city would need to put together to connect opportunities, to signpost learning opportunities, to connect individuals to enrichment opportunities across the city, which might be they might be employment, so they might be job opportunities or work placements, or the opportunity to get to know more about an organisation. They might be learning opportunities within a formal education institution or an informal learning context, or they might be civic opportunities, so opportunities to engage more with the sort of civic side of the city and perhaps support other city inhabitants.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And if I understand correctly, the real history of the cities of learning movement, if you like, started in Chicago around 2003. So what were, and you were involved in that, right?
No, so I worked with the team shortly after they'd created the sort of technical solution for that. So it was 2013, actually. It was the Chicago Summer of Learning. And they knew that they had a lot of informal learning opportunities happening across the city, but they wanted a way of making those programs more visible and also having some way of recognizing the learning. So, before the open badges concept came along, which we'll dive into, I think, in a bit, there wasn't an easy way of actually helping people to recognize and share their learning in verifiable ways unless they were, unless that learning was happening through a formal education institution. So the Chicago Summer of Learning essentially brought all these informal learning providers together, and then open badges were used as the mechanism for raising the profile and visibility of the learning opportunities.
What were the outputs of that, some of them? So, how many people were involved? I'm really interested to understand the feedback from individuals who went through that learning experience, because as you described it, I suppose, the cities of learning, one of the positives would be that it recognises that learning is not just about a certificate.
Yeah, absolutely. So open badges, because they are digital, because they can be, because they include evidence, they can recognize learning that might be harder, you know, to capture. So things like employability skills, you know, the ability to manage change, being a good team player, and being curious, having agency. Things like that, we can capture those attributes through some of the functionality that's part of an open badge. So things like the ability to take video and link to a video of someone demonstrating a skill, or gaining endorsements from on evidence included in the badge. So that might be from employers, peers, teachers, so that you get this richer picture of someone's ability. And the ability to sort of provide that that narrative around someone's skills, which you just don't get on a bit of paper. So, you know, an open badge is essentially, at a basic level, it is a digital certificate, but it's a digital certificate, you know, with bells on. It's got all these additional valuable elements to it, which allow people to really understand the bigger picture of someone's skills.
And it sounds very much as if, you know, you mentioned the bit of paper, but actually the output of this would be an all singing, all dancing CV, essentially, for the person and the individual.
Yep.
Again, I'm just trying to picture in my head from a user how it would work from an ecosystem or a learner management system. Was there one place that pivoted all of this information? Or could the, if I was to submit a video for me doing, I don't know, communication skills in the community, how would I then evidence that?
Yep. So just going back to the Chicago Summer of Learning, there wasn't really, because that was so early on in the sort of evolution of the open badges ecosystem, there wasn't a system there to support anything beyond, you know, single badges. Mm-hmm. So what that meant was that, you know, people were gaining badges, and actually over 100,000 badges were issued during that summer period of the Chicago Summer of Learning. Which I think shows the interest and the uptake in gaining some recognition for the informal learning opportunities that were happening. But there wasn't a way to actually link those together, connect them to opportunities. So that had to happen in an offline kind of context. So what was recognised when the RSA and Digital Me, who were the organisations I worked with, and when we were looking at bringing the idea of a Cities of Learning approach to the UK, what became clear was that a system that allowed those opportunities to be built in and those pathways to be built in would be really helpful. So what we investigated and explored and created a prototype for the Cities of Learning UK was developing, building on the work of a previous Mozilla project that I worked on, which looked at how you could actually connect badges together, and how you could have an issuer, so that might be an employer, it might be an education establishment, set out pathways to a particular goal, but at the same time, how you could also allow earners to discover their own and create their own pathways. So not everyone knows where they want to go with their career. And, you know, I certainly didn't when I was starting out. I had no idea where I wanted to go. But I knew some of the skills I had. And actually, I also wasn't aware of some of the skills I had as well, because I hadn't had the work experience to be able to articulate those in a way that was, you know, using the language of the workplace. So there was an element required to support people to discover their skills, but also to discover how those skills could connect them to opportunities. And using a place such as a city to sort of provide the wrapper for that, everybody has some kind of connection to a place, you know, to their city. So it's quite a nice vehicle for helping people to think, oh, right, okay, I can, you know, I can look at their opportunities within my area, and I can begin to see my skills. I can begin to understand them better. So I can begin to see how my skills link me to opportunities. So the pathways part begins to become very important, because it takes badges beyond just being an isolated element and really turns them into a currency, if you like, because what you have with a badge is something that you can exchange for an opportunity, or you can use that badge to see how it connects you to things that you perhaps hadn't even considered in a learning or employment context.
I think that's a really important point as well. What was coming through to me as you were talking there is that you may have certain skills and qualities, but you don't even recognise that that's a quality that could provide you with an additional employment opportunity or an additional career. And it just resonated with me when I was a teacher and I had my old tutor group many moons ago, selling them the concept of transferable skills. And wouldn't it have been great? Wouldn't it be great to be able to show that audience, okay, you are great at communication. These are the possible routes for you. And as you were describing, am I right to assume that the ultimate goal is digital badges, and we'll go through the terminology in a minute, will actually help in a city someone from any background make that link from a, you know, communication, these are the potential employment opportunities, many of which I probably have never even heard of, but now I'd have the confidence and I'm empowered to go into that position.
Yep, absolutely, that's the aim. And the research that informed the Discover Open Badges project, so the first Pathways project, some of the research I undertook for that, you know, highlighted that a lot of people, not just young people, but a lot of people, you know, don't recognise they have skills. And then even if they do recognise a skill, they don't necessarily have the confidence to think that they can embark upon certain career, pathways or certain life pathways. And that was particularly relevant for people from disadvantaged backgrounds. So that that project, it was funded by the Gates Foundation, and the focus was supporting disadvantaged youth to broaden their career horizons. So some of the research highlighted that people from disadvantaged backgrounds, as well as not being able to perhaps articulate their skills, they don't believe that they can actually embark, that some things are just not for them. Mm-hmm. Because they don't see it in their immediate family or community context, you know, it's not for them to become a doctor, you know, an engineer, whatever it is, because those jobs aren't the ones that they're seeing in their community. And so there are a variety of social and economic reasons behind this, you know, or factors behind this. So, people will make job choices based on where they've got the money to get a bus to. They'll make job choices based on only what they see as a major employer in their current context. And there was, you know, there's this concept of knower, seekers, dreamers. So people who know they will go on to, you know, higher education, further higher education, and are confident in their career trajectory. There are seekers who you know, understand opportunities are out there, but aren't quite sure whether it's for them. And then, you know, the research from a fantastic book called Ready, Willing and Able brought together some of this research. Dreamers who just don't believe that, you know, any of those sort of, you know, those jobs that will give them career satisfaction, or, you know, that will be financially rewarding for them, that they're possible for them. So that's, for me, one of the key things about A City of Learning, is that it helps people to see that, one, they have skills, and two, that those skills really do link them to opportunities. And it's a highly motivating idea that if you can see a pathway laid out, and you know you've already achieved part of that pathway, gone along part of that pathway, then it's for me, that seems highly motivating, that you would think, oh well, okay, I've got this far, perhaps I can continue along that trajectory.
The word you used a minute ago was currency, and that really, really comes to mind there as you're giving some of those examples. So if I go back to my example of when I was teaching, some of the students, they were first of their family to go to university, and yeah, some decisions were made purely based on, this is how much it's going to cost, or this is how much I'm going to have to invest. And as you were describing that, the currency concept of a given competence or a given badge can really provide a return on investment, or it makes skills a currency, as you just said there very well.
Yeah.
Okay. And I kind of cut you off there. You're going to make another point, I think.
No, that's okay. No, I think, I suppose just to sum up, the pathways element of A City of Learning, I think perhaps just to summarise that, is that, you know, it signposts opportunities, importantly connects them. But I think one of the key things is that it can help to inspire people as well to really increase their life and career horizons.
Okay. And you're working on the Glasgow City of Learning, and I think we've touched upon digital badges and some of that terminology. I'll leave it at that for now, and so we can hopefully discuss that now and bring the Glasgow City of Learning out in some of those examples. Now, I think you've maybe mentioned digital badges, but from my perspective, this is an area that I've been interested in for a little while and want to explore more. And I've heard, you know, open badges, digital badges, digital credentials. Are they separate definitions, or are we talking about the same thing? You've mentioned digital RSA and digital me. Who else is involved in designing these badges? So if someone was to start listening to this podcast and when they finish it, say, okay, we want to embark on the concepts of digital badges or competencies or credentials, what would be the place to start? You know, what is a digital badge essentially?
Yeah, the terms are used kind of interchangeably. I think digital credentials is possibly the best overarching term, and open badges are a digital credential. So a digital credential is essentially something that, you know, recognises skill or achievement in a digital format. And the great thing about open badges is that they're built to an open standard. They were the concept was developed by Mozilla, who, you know, we've discussed. They have that open way of working. So because they're based on an open standard, it means that they can be used interoperably. So they will work in different systems. So if you are issued and as an earner, you're awarded a badge by your employer, but you're also awarded a badge from a different system that you're, you know, that an education institution gives to you. And maybe you're also awarded a badge from a small voluntary organization you do some work with. All of those badges they'll work. They can be saved by that individual to their backpack. So that's their own storage space where they keep their badges. And there are different backpacks out there, different systems where individuals can store their badges.
Sorry, just when you say backpack, we're talking about what is essentially a digital CV, or what's the we used to have a funny book at school, actually in college, a digital record of achievement.
Yeah, it's similar to that. So yeah, it's different systems will, you know, might call them different things. So it might be a portfolio, it might be Mozilla created a backpack initially that again was open sourced, so it could be replicated by others. So there are different systems and badging systems out there that have their own places for individuals to store their badges, and they can create, you know, a badge profile page from that. They can choose whether they share their badges or not. They can make them visible or just private to them, and they can also share those badges out as well. So for example, they could share them on a professional profile such as LinkedIn. You know, they can tweet them, they can put them in an email footer, signature, etc.
So we've made a badge. How you would go about making a badge? Who would decide if, let's just say, creativity is a badge? Who would decide what things make up that badge, and when you would be able to sign it off? So you mentioned earlier the links to employers, higher education institutions. Is that a collaborative thing, or I'd be interested to understand that phase of the journey?
Yep. So, you know, one of the great things and one of the challenges about working in an open way is that literally anyone can create a badge. So people where, you know, sort of recognition of learning is their day-to-day work can create a badge. So, you know, a college, a school, a higher education institution, but also, you know, informal learning organizations. So the example of a voluntary organization, they could create a badge. So one of the challenges with the development of badges is supporting, you know, all of those different contexts to create badges that are of value. So literally, yeah, the answer is that anyone can create a badge. Anyone can decide what the criteria would be for the badge. They can decide whether that badge will align to existing competency frameworks, such as qualification frameworks that a country might have, such as, you know, the Scottish Credit and Qualifications Framework and the European Qualifications Framework, etc. So that work is developing at the moment, actually, and is being built into the latest version of the standard, is that ability to select that a badge actually aligns to a particular point, a particular level on a competency framework. But essentially, it is up to the issuer what criteria they are looking for, whether they engage with others or whether they just create this themselves, and you know, how much they align that to other frameworks that might exist. I did some work last year over the last few years for a European project called the Open Badge Network, and we were looking at gained European Erasmus Plus funding. And so it was looking at badges in a European context and looking at things like quality, policy, uptake. And working on the quality side, it became clear. I issued a survey to, you know, try and get some feedback. What would quality mean in terms of a badge? And what would make someone trust a badge? Because that becomes the big question. We all know that we can trust a degree from a university because we know that they've been, they've gone through rigorous quality assurance processes. They're, you know, externally verified, etc. But how do we trust? How do we know that we can trust a badge from a small voluntary organisation that we've never heard of? So in that context, it became very clear that building networks around badges was very supportive of helping people to develop badges that were of value because they were connecting into, you know, they were going just beyond their own needs. They were thinking about their badge within a wider kind of ecosystem and context, but also that for establishing trust in a badge, if you have a network built up around it, the feedback from the survey that I created was that earners would trust a badge from an organisation they knew. So again, we have existing trust networks. You know, they are probably the formal education institutions, maybe some others. But for us to build trust in badges, if that that issuing organisation is part of a wider network and we can learn about that organisation and what it's trying to do and, you know, the thinking behind its criteria for its badge, how it's assessing the badge, etc., then that can help us to build trust in that badge as well. So networks, this again also sort of comes into the cities of learning context, where when you have organisations across a city developing badges or developing opportunities or developing pathways, then that can really help to build that trust as well.
And I imagine that trust, there's two things related to big organisations there. I imagine A, that trust is really important for you to demonstrate to a large organisation or a business the benefit of a digital badge. But then likewise, have you had experience or examples of organisations or businesses becoming involved with a Cities of Learning or a digital badge or digital credential, as you pointed out earlier, pushing their own motivation, their own reason, and maybe trying to force competency through? Do you see that as an issue? Am I making that up?
No, well, yeah, I mean, everyone's going to come in with their own agenda, aren't they? So I think, you know, with the work I did actually with the Open Badges and Scottish Education Group a few years ago, that was, you know, that was at a time when the badge ecosystem, the whole badge concept was still very young and is still relatively young now. But, you know, it was when you bring people together from all different, that all have different lenses on the subject. So the Open Badges and Scottish Education Group brought together people from, you know, national and local government, from employers, from education institutions, universities, colleges, schools, from badge projects, from, you know, from unions, trade unions, and so on. So there was quite a wide, from the qualifications framework, there was quite a wide group of people, all of whom had different wishes with regards to, you know, this idea that they would all see different opportunities and different challenges relating to that. But the great thing when you get people in a room and you develop things in an open manner is that everyone has the opportunity to have their perspective heard. And so that in itself generates a sense of ownership, because people feel that they've been part of developing, you know, the solution and the way forward. So it's messy and it's difficult, and it, you know, it would be much easier to just go, this is how we're doing things. But you just, you know, my experience certainly is that is, you know, it's not an effective way of managing change. And that's really what this is. It is, you know, this is a new way of doing things. It's a big change for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. And I use the example of an organization imposing their motivation and expectation on a digital badge, because reading around and speaking to people from businesses, I don't think maybe a lot of key decision makers fully understand the true benefits of digital badges and cities of learnings that you've articulated so far in this episode. And one of the key things I think is around the competency framework. So everyone knows we're going to go to a society where, you know, the specialists will really be the generalists. So the ability to have person X in an industry come into yours with those transferable skills is critical. I work in the southwest. One of the biggest projects in Europe right now, over the next 5 years, will require 81% of transferable skills. So that is a challenge to the actual project. And I can't help but think, if an organization fully bought in and invested time and effort into a set of digital badges, were open and honest about the competencies they required, that golden thread from the person on the street getting a job would be a lot easier. I think still it's going to be complicated, but that's the true benefit coming through to me, I think. We've identified the benefits to the user, but the benefit to the organisation there is quite clear in my mind. Is that a fair reflection? And is that happening, to your knowledge, right now?
Yeah, it's beginning to happen, and I absolutely think, you know, you've summarised it perfectly. That sort of golden thread and the connection, I think that's the bit that's becoming really important. And you know, with the Chicago Summer of Learning, there are now numerous cities in the US which are taking this, are following this city of learning approach, because they've recognised that it allows businesses and other, you know, interested stakeholders to gain access and have that connection to, whether it's talent pipelines for the future workforce, or whether it's, you know, individuals that, you know, could really excel in a particular field, so it's a university that wants, you know, that would be interested in them, or whether it's, you know, whether it's organizations that are trying to support people from disadvantaged backgrounds, and, you know, helping them to see how there are more opportunities than they perhaps first thought. You have to have some way of showing those connections. And really, the cities of learning idea, with bringing people together to start mapping and you know, highlighting and signposting the opportunities that exist within a given area, and then having a platform which allows for the discovery of those opportunities, and, you know, badges that people can take to prove that they have a skill, badges that they can aspire to, because they see, okay, well, I've got this, you know, these badges. If I get these and these badges, that would actually open up an opportunity with this, you know, within this industry that I'm interested in getting into. So, you know, so that signposting and discovery side becomes very important. And the connection, I think a good example perhaps of where, you know, those connections have been valued is Siemens, for example. They've been issuing badges, and they've been issuing badges for a variety of reasons. One is for young, you know, kids, sort of 11 to 16, to highlight the skills that will be required, you know, in 5 years' time within their industry. So that's helping them with the talent pipeline. But also, they've been issuing badges internally for staff development internally, and for voluntary work that members of staff do within the local community. And I hosted a webinar actually with the person who was managing that program, and she, you know, she commented that it was a fantastic way to connect with the local community. So, you know, they're a big employer in their local area, but you know, feeling part of that that local community, you know, which links in with things like you know, their sort of outreach programs and so on, is and corporate social responsibility programs, you know, that it allowed them to have that connection. So I think the fact that badges can, you know, recognize learning in so many different contexts and are so shareable, and with the pathways context, having that those connections really helps that communication to, you know, to solidify and become better.
Again, some great examples there. Thank you for sharing. And another thing that came into my head was around, again, large businesses. If we, what's on their roadmap, if you like, to 2020 and beyond, it's going to be concern around the digital society we're going to work in, innovation, and some of these broader competencies that we can't yet define. But I can't help but imagine that in the future, if an organization was to sign up to digital badges, that actually those competencies will become active and alive. You'll be able to analyze them, understand what are the shortages in your workforce, and, you know, provide learning, training, development, and so forth around that, as opposed to these are the competencies we need, but we don't know how our employees are really performing against those collectively. Huge benefits there.
Yeah, and you know, one of there are a few ways which, you know, that badges aid that, because they can be tagged with keywords, so you can tag badges with skills, you know, so that they are easily searchable and discovered. But also badges are machine readable because they're created digitally, and there's also some work actually on making them even more easily read by machines, through creating some kind of standards around how criteria is written and so on. So there's some work going on about that around that at the moment, because at the moment the sort of the badges are there, they're improving all the time, but actually where there's a bit of a lag at the moment, I think, is things like job application systems. Where you can't at the moment submit a badge, you know, those systems wouldn't be able to go in and read a badge. So I think that's a next stage of development, though, is that, so that whole process makes it much easier for hiring people into a business, but also then, you know, if that's connecting in with other HR systems, being able to identify the skills of your workforce so that you can put teams together in a much more agile and flexible way based on skills.
Mm. Yes. So the concept there of, rather than submitting and editing your CV for, you know, five different roles, you're able to submit five or six badges, which would automatically trigger the evidence that the recruiter could see and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah. How far away are we from that, do you think?
Well, based on my
utopian question.
Yeah, based on my experience of some, you know, sort of systems. HR systems, I guess. You know, some are more advanced than others. So I think, yeah, that's there's definitely so much more discussion happening around micro credentials, around you know, open badges, about the need for them, that, you know, I think other related industries will begin to sort of catch up. But at the moment, I think the focus has been on developing the digital credentials concept and context and making that work. And now there are these sort of industries which are or disciplines which are going to be relevant or related to them, are, you know, will need to do some work now, I think, to be able to really harness the benefits of them.
And what if we get to 2020 or 2019, there's a huge surge in the concepts of cities of learning and in turn digital badges. So you've got Glasgow is up and running and performing excellently, Manchester, Birmingham, Bristol, and so forth. Is there a risk that certain digital badges could be duplicated and therefore cause some confusion? Yes or no? How would you see we would prevent that?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, the stage that the Glasgow City of Learning is at the moment is it's just absolutely, you know, it's embryonic just now. I worked on the pilots which took place in 2017, where we worked with three cities. So we worked with Brighton, Plymouth, and Manchester, three very different cities, different contexts, different sizes, different, you know, sort of needs and so on. But as part of that work, there was the development of skill spines, and that work was intended to look at what are if we look at the sort of global discussions happening around skills. So, for example, the OECD, you know, has developed a framework for skills, which for lifelong learning, which very much places emphasis on soft skills. So, you know, those things that, you know, employers are also increasingly telling us that they're needing. So there are, you know, their work has been done on that within a. If we take a cities of learning approach across the UK, it would allow us to identify skills that, you know, are coming up time and again in these different cities, that perhaps it would be better to, you know, would it be better to actually collaborate and come together to design those, so that that we build a sort of, you know, an Uber badge, if you like, but that has had input and is valued and trusted right across the UK. Inevitably, each city will have its own skills requirements as well. It will have industries that are, you know, an industry focus that's specific to it, and skills gaps that it's identified. So there will, you know, by necessity be badges that would be relevant to a particular locality. And then obviously there's, you know, the sort of strategic element around those within each city, which will be slightly different and be aligning to different contexts, different political you know, strategies and policies and so on. So what I would like to do with the Glasgow City of Learning is, you know, I would love that to become part of the next phase of pilots that's being led by the RSE. And so that's the aim, because I think it would allow Glasgow to be part of a bigger City of Learning, you know, movement, and not just doing something on its own. Although I think there's benefit, you know, there are very clear benefits from the discussions I've been having with various different people across the city, and from various different, you know, education, employment, government contexts, that there would be huge benefit for Glasgow in itself. But it's always good to be part of something bigger and to be able to share and collaborate and build something of trust that might be useful across the board in other contexts.
A really interesting discussion on this thus far, and I'm just conscious, if someone's listening to us right now, again, they just started a role as, you know, a digital learning manager or a head of or a team member who's got a problem, and they can see actually this could help solve that. What would be your couple of tips on where to start, and what would be the things you'd say be wary of?
Yep. So in terms of, and I use badges all the time, so yep, it's fine to use. I think for badges, the key is considering the value. You know, why would someone want to earn this badge? Why will it be valuable to them? And if we think of that idea of currency, would they be able to, you know, build on that to submit that as to gain employment? Would the value purely be for them to see that they have a skill and that they hadn't recognised before, that might then provide them with some confidence and motivation to take their learning further? So considering the value, and that value can be very different and can be just as relevant depending on who the users are. So you have to think about who are the users for this badge, why would they want to earn it, and also thinking about why would someone want to view this badge. And again, the viewer might be a prospective employer, an admissions person at a education institution, or it might be just the earner themselves. So, you know, again, that there's value in them recognising that they have a strong skill set that they can use and benefit from. And there's also the why would you want to issue the badge? So that, again, sort of links back to our discussions about what's the value for me issuing this badge? Is it better for me actually to engage with others and gain some input from the industry that this badge is for? If you're an education institution, might be a university or a college, linking up with a big employer in that industry to create a badge that they make sure is completely relevant to the skills that industry or that employer is saying that they need. So, all comes back to the value, I think, and the users, the value to a specific user.
And as always, start with why is what's coming through. Earlier on, you mentioned the organisation Digital Me. So to my understanding, they are the, and I'm going to get corrected here, they are the main and one of the only organisations that distribute badges. Would that be the place, organisation to start with, or could you create them yourselves?
Yep, you can. So they're just one provider. So Digital Me are one provider of open badge and digital credential solutions. They're based here in the UK, but there are many others. There are a number of systems. So if someone searched for an open badge system or platform, they'll see that lots come up. Digital Me developed the prototypes for the Cities of Learning work, the pilots in 2017. I worked with them on that. But there are a variety of different badging platforms out there, and actually more seem to be coming up all the time. There was a new backpack platform just came online recently as well. So a good starting point for people who are interested is something called Badge News. So it's a newsletter which is actually created by We Are Open, so the cooperative I work with.
Hey, I'm signing up. Very good, thank you. Okay, so that really concludes our main discussion. Before we wrap up, we've got a few quickfire questions, and to quote unquote, they're meant to be a bit of fun. But they're more to understand a bit more about you, really, and how you learn from a personal perspective. I'm really intrigued into this, and to see the responses that you bring out and how they compare to others. So they can be as quick or as long as you want them to be. So the first one I'd ask you, what is a great learning experience, a great one? What does it look and feel like to you?
So I think for me, I have to have some control over it. I like to, figure things out for myself. I have to understand why something's happening. And then personally, I also want to put it into practice. So I really want to do something with it. For example, one great, quite recent learning experience was learning to scuba dive. And within 3 days, we had learned how not to kill ourselves underwater, which is
a good start,
handy.
Right? Yeah.
and at the end of those 3 days, had learned the theory, had practiced all of the skills we needed to practice in the water, and had actually done a couple of successful dives as well. So that was a great experience, because it allowed the practice, you were doing something, and you could get access to the theory and learn that in your own way, in your own context, in your own time.
So you kind of like to have the content or resources available to you, but you'll steer yourself. Okay, yeah, I can resonate with that one in particular. Okay. Are you a book or a Kindle person?
Definitely a book.
Okay, why not a Kindle?
A book. funnily enough, given the area I work in, I think it's I like to switch off. I like to get away from the screen. There's something about a book. I like that tangible thing of it. You can dip in and out of it. You've got the whole story there in your hand. I'm most certainly a book, not a Kindle person.
Yeah, everyone I've interviewed so far said that.
Really?
It's really interesting. And the final question from me, well, I always say that there's another question after, but the final question on the quickfire questions, if you could change one thing about your industry, what would it be?
So I guess I kind of, well, there's, I guess I'm ed tech is my area. So I kind of span technology and education industries. If I focus on education, because I think the tech industry has just been moving so quickly, and the pace of creativity and innovation has been incredible over the last few years, but I'm not sure that could be said so much of education. I think education, the work that I'm seeing around open badges, there are lots of pilots and there are lots of areas of interest, pockets of things happening, but at the moment it's still quite far off being embedded. There are very few formal education institutions, for example, that have any kind of strategy around digital credentials.
Why do you think that is?
I think these are big organizations and they take a long time to change. You know, there is a huge shift in thinking that needs to take place around them. There will be impact on systems, on processes, on how we assess and where we assess as well. You know, and that takes a long time. Remember, you know, I've gone through various different phases in my work in sort of tech, in a tech and education context. So we're starting off more on online learning and, you know, really seeing that being a 10-year period from first talking to people about the opportunities of online learning through to actually really seeing embedded policies and comprehensive strategies and thinking around the systems and how those would be, you know, how staff and students would be supported. So I think these things always seem to take time within education. And in a way, that's right, because, you know, it means that there's a sort of rigor to testing out, is this the right way to go? How are we going to engage with this? But it would be quite nice to see some of that speeding up a little as well.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for that input. And now is the final question for me. If people want to get in touch with you or follow anything that you're doing on social media or your website, where can they reach out to you on?
Yep, so they can get in touch with me and my colleagues at We Are Open at weareopen.coop. I blog frequently as well, so I've blogged, that was the post that you saw, the mm-hmm. Cities of Learning post. People can access that through my Medium blog, so it's Gráinne Hamilton on Medium. I'm also Gráinne Hamilton on Twitter, and if they search for Gráinne Hamilton on LinkedIn as well, they could find out a bit more about me there and what I'm doing there.
Yes, and I will share those links through my channels as well to help. Gráinne, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and I look forward to hearing from you soon.
It's been fantastic. It's been great to chat. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to that episode, guys. And thank you to Gráinne for her time. I'm aware there's so many podcasts out there and your time is valuable and you've listened to mine. So thank you. If you want to hear more about my thoughts on this particular episode or other episodes I've released, you can check my blog out, lloyddean.co.uk. So that's lloyddean.co.uk. And finally, in next week's show, we will explore the digital ecosystem and what that wondrous buzzword means.